Hey Jabber fans, this is Cassidy. I wanted to give you a heads up about this week's episode and let you know that the sound quality here is going to be a little bit rough. For some reason, when I sat down with Brad, Amanda, and Katie, when we sat down to do our show, the recording setting was wrong, and it was either recording raw from the desktop mic or on a weird setting on my recording device, and it came out a little rough and kind of clippy, and a lot of room noise. I've tried to soften it up as much as possible, tried to clean the file as much as I could, but it isn't going to sound as good as the usual episode because I wasn't recording from my podcasting mic. I hope you enjoy the episode. I hope you like what you hear. There's a lot of good discussion in there about the movie Keanu and a few other things. But yeah, I just wanted to give you a good heads up to let you know that this is not normally what the show sounds like. Thanks for listening. Welcome to another episode of Jabber and the Drone, the movie review podcast that politely disagrees to agree. With me here today is formerly of the Quarter Life Crisis podcast, Brad Decker and Amanda Kowalski, friends of the show.
We're the podcast formerly known as the Quarter Life Crisis.
Whoa. Also with us today is animator Katie Tambor.
Hi.
And you're like the most successful person I know.
Oh, that's really sweet.
You're an animator over at Titmouse Animation.
Yeah, Titmouse Inc.
And a lot of people probably know that for their involvement, or I knew it mostly from their involvement in Adult Swim.
Mm-hmm.
Legend of Korra is a thing people like.
Yeah, they did China, Illinois, mm-hmm. and...
The show you work
yeah.
on.
Yeah. I worked on a show called Kirby Buckets. It was for Disney XD, an animated show about a kid who wants to be an animator and his cartoons and his imagination come to life. And no one else can see him but him and can see the characters except for the main characters.
Right.
So he's a little mental.
Right. Are you allowed to talk about the project you've just been put on?
Oh, yeah. That's also, like, interesting right now. So, yeah, I'm working... I got moved on to a project for Home, which is DreamWorks' movie Home came out a couple of years ago.
Is that mm-hmm. one with the alien voiced by Sheldon Cooper?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
my mom loves that movie.
Yeah, yeah. It's a story about a bunch of purple aliens called the Boov. They invade Earth, but they're really friendly. They kind of just coexist with humans, and the show is going to be on Netflix, and it kind of just takes off after shortly after Tip finds her mom and the Gorg have I'm assuming everyone watched the movie, but I guess that was an
I don't think that movie
assumption.
Did very well.
No, I don't think it did very well. Well, but also like Comcast just bought DreamWorks, so now I'm like I guess I work for Comcast.
Oh. Right now. Oh. Break up your corporate shackles.
Yeah, we should probably draw like some kind of pentagram around her. Try and bind her. America's most hated company.
Yes. Yeah. was not my decision.
Right. As long as you're not working for their customer service phone thing, I think
yeah.
people can probably handle you.
Oh, you'll God, be okay. No. Yeah. So
today we're going to be reviewing the film Keanu, the comedy starring Keegan-Michael Key and Jordan Peele of the hit Comedy Central show Key and Peele. And at the end of the show, I will not be discussing, but my guests will be discussing their Netflix homework, which I failed to watch, guess who's next.
Yeah, good job.
Guess
Cassidy.
Who's back. Back again.
Guess who's back.
Guess who's back.
The answer to guess who's back is Hitler.
Hitler's back.
So tell
and
your
he's
friends.
He's pissed.
Hitler's back, and he's a little disappointed with how things worked out for him.
At the end of the show, I always talk about all of the people I know and all the things that all the other podcasts I'm vaguely associated with. And I used to talk about Quarter Life Crisis when it was still a thing. But now I've replaced that in my show notes with what's going on with Panel and Frame, which is your new thing, Brad Decker.
Yeah, Panel and Frame, it's a digital publication dedicated to the very finest emerging voices in comics, literature, art, and film.
Woo!
We publish daily to our now 1,700, which is not a way that people describe numbers, but our 1,700-ish subscribers.
Really quickly,
yeah,
to get a number of 700.
We hit 1,000 earlier this month.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of doubled in size remarkably quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And things are going really well.
Yeah, and I've been talking about, specifically, you have a print zine coming out.
Yeah, the print zine is on its way as soon as we wrap our brains around what crowdfunding is. I have a very dedicated team of engineers looking that up as we speak.
Type.
You might be hearing in the background my bay of engineers. It's teams.
Girl, Lemonade just came out.
No. That's not that bay. It's like an engineering bay,
the bay.
Yeah, like a 1,000 monkeys at 1,000 typewriters. We are trying to figure out the crowdfunding thing.
GoFundMe, isn't that a thing?
Yeah, it's.
Yeah,
I
wouldn't do that.
You got your options. Crowdfunding is weird. So you got Indiegogo, you got GoFundMe, you got Kickstarter, you got Patreon.
Yeah.
Kickstarter is probably what we're gonna go with because people know what Kickstarter is.
Yeah.
I mean, like your grandmother knows who Kickstarter is.
Mm-hmm.
What Kickstarter is, not who. And it's a you get in name recognition what you lose in the other smaller ones, what they offer.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody charges a hefty fee.
Yeah,
somewhere in the neighborhood of like 8-10%.
Oh,
right. And all of the pieces that have been selected for the print zine have already been, like, it's pretty much designed, right? It just needs to be actually printed at this point.
Yeah, we got lucky early in the life of the publication. We met a guy online. His name is Dave, and Dave has been extremely patient and helpful with us and has done a bunch of design work basically gratis, not expecting anything in return other than to have his name on the thing.
Yeah.
So really cool, and it looks, we have some of the mock-ups, and it looks so clean and professional. It looks
good.
Yeah.
I was surprised myself. Like, yeah. When I saw it, I was like, oh, this is, like, real.
Yeah, we got really talented people on board. It was insane how quickly we did.
I told them that, too, because I saw how, like, good-looking it was. And I was like, how much are you going to charge for this when you sell it? And I was like, you should charge more. Because it looks really good.
Yeah, part of the appeal that we're going for is that it's going to be, like, ridiculously cheap for the sort of thing that you're going to get.
Yeah.
It's going to cost less than you will expect. I don't want to talk about numbers right now because that can change.
No. You still have to get it funded.
Yeah.
Then we can, and you won't even know your numbers until you've known how much you've spent.
Of course.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right. But it looks good. It looks real. Like, we had a literary zine on our campus that, like, the creative writing majors and stuff would put together every year called Black Rock and Sage. And it looks, if anyone's familiar with, like that style of thing where it's, like, bound and numbered, and the cover art is really cool and it's legit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Well, that's exciting. And you also run another, I don't know, what do you, article
publication.
Website? Publication.
Yeah.
Yeah, the the synapse?
Yeah, I don't want to talk too much about the synapse. It's boring. But we do education, and that's my profession now. Right. So it's cool to be involved with it. But it's not boring. It's super cool. But it's also not comics, literature, art, or film. It is teachers and other concerned education people.
Right. I have a friend, a pod friend on here, a friend of the show, Patrick, who's been on our show, and I've been on his a few times. He's a teacher from Detroit, and I've pointed him to the synapse because I thought he might have something to contribute, as well as Panel on Frame, because he's also a big comic geek.
I just published a bunch of stuff about Detroit. Their situation is incredible in how bad it is. Like, right. It's the sort of thing that I barely believe. I've seen the pictures.
It's yeah.
But yeah, I would love to hear from him.
Cool. Well, let's get into the movie news.
Yeah.
And now I have to pull out my phone because can't get the computer to pull up the internet. But the first bit of news, and I think you were a little bit excited to talk about this. Nathan Fillion has been announced to play Wonder Man in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and apparently already has.
Already? No. He hasn't already played Wonder Man. He's appeared in the MCU in Guardians of the Galaxy as a blue alien.
Yeah, like he wasn't. he didn't look like himself.
He was heavily prosthetic.
Yeah, heavily. Like you wouldn't notice until someone pointed it out.
But he is the guy that gets Groot's roots up his nose. And now he'll be Power Man. Wait.
Wonder Man,
sorry. Power Man is Luke Cage. now he'll be Wonder Man, and I don't know what that means.
I don't really know what that means either.
I don't either. That's what I was going to ask you guys, if you knew anything about Wonder Man. I'm reading this on...
We should have looked this up.
I'm reading this on Birth Movies Death, but they said that once a villain, his brain waves were used as the basis of the Vision's personality, and he was later resurrected and became a stuntman in Hollywood. Seriously, one of the coolest uses of superpowers this side of the NFL Super Pro. Birth Movies Deaths like to use a lot of jokes in their writing.
Right.
But yeah, that. So I guess he's sort of maybe a little bit of a joke hero, or maybe it's been written as a joke title. He's supposed to be kind of cocky and arrogant.
That stuff about using his brainwaves as the blueprint for the Vision, though, that's all out the window.
Yeah, because they've already established that their version of the Vision is Paul Bettany as Jarvis turned into, like, basically manifested into a physical form.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's nothing,
it'll be a new take.
Basically, it sounds like this guy is burly and invulnerable. And to have Nathan Fillion have that sense of power, I'm just thinking Captain Hammer.
It's gonna be fun. I think he's just gonna be like, I mean, if he thinks highly of himself, then
he can play cocky well.
Yeah, and Captain Hammer,
like,
in space
is a Hollywood guy, which that's what they sounds like they would turn him into. Then he sounds exactly like Captain Hammer. If you've ever seen, have you seen that?
Yeah.
Okay,
Doctor Sing Along.
Doctor Horrible
Sing Along.
I have the Blu-ray.
Okay, so you have heard of it.
To think that started as a series of literally blogs that became shorts that was all because of a writer's strike.
Right, yeah.
Dr. Horrible is great. When are we getting Dr. Horrible 2?
They keep talking about it. I think the last I heard, and it said nothing to do with our news story. Yeah. The last I heard was that Joss Whedon was trying to decide whether to do it as a staged production or whether to do it as a movie or whether to do it as another series of shorts. So I think right now he's just trying to A, get everyone together, and B, figure out what medium he wants to tell it in.
Mm.
Because he can kind of do whatever he wants.
He is
He is Joss Whedon.
Joss, I think it's a soft J. It's Joss Whedon.
Joss Whedon.
Yeah.
All right. Second news story. Alicia Vikander has been cast as the new Lara Croft in a Tomb Raider reboot, remake, rebrand.
Is that how we're calling it?
It's okay.
It's not in canon with the Angelina Jolie movies. So it is kind of a reboot.
Here's the thing. After 10 years, we got a reboot of Fantastic Four. Did you see how that one went?
Twice.
It's been about 10 years.
Yeah, but the difference, the Angelina Jolie, I guess they were the first movies. The Angelina Jolie movies are not as god awful as the first Fantastic Four movies.
Yeah.
So,
which, to be fair, I mean,
we have a higher chance of success on this. Also, Tomb Raider has been rebooted in the video games over the last 4 or 5 years, and they're already doing a sequel to the sequel of that reboot, and it's been received really well. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying we needed a Lara Croft Tomb Raider remake. I'm just saying that the material at least exists.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I see no reason why, of all of the different video game franchises out there, like, Lara Croft can't work as a movie. Other than we were talking about earlier, they've just never been able to crack the code on getting video games to translate well as movies. Even with the Ratchet and Clank movie, which just recently came out, was not... about this, Katie.
Oh, it was bad. I'm a big fan of the Ratchet and Clank series, too. It was... I'm very sad that, like, it wasn't as... I was, like, stupid obsessed with this movie, too, for, like, a month coming in, because I knew it was coming out at the end of the month.
The trailers didn't look bad.
Like, Ratchet and Clank barely, like, spend, like, a lot of screen time together, like, in one place. Like, they get paired off with these other characters that aren't even in the game.
That's not how...
Right? It's, like, it doesn't make... I mean, I'm totally fine with, like, you know, with making edits to the original story. I mean, like, there's plenty to improve on the original story.
But make it
story.
Make sense.
Yeah, yeah. Like, yeah. They changed a whole lot of things around. Sorry. Like, okay. So they changed it around, like, a lot of the roles. No character has, like, any kind of character development, like, was completely replaced with just really shoddy jokes that just didn't... A couple of them made me laugh, but, like, it was like, maybe, like...
Right.
I have heard that the game based on the movie is not awful, though.
Oh, that's the snake eating its own tail. Remember when there was Street Fighter, the movie, the game?
Yes. I mean, I wasn't conscious at the time. I think I was 4.
Right.
But I remember that it exists.
Yeah. I very much remember that.
Well... I'm not going home. I'm going to kick Bison's ass. Oh, that's my Jean-Claude Van Damme. It's getting better.
Outside of the news of there being a Tomb Raider reboot, whatever it may be, let's assume that it's as good as that can be. Mm-hmm. What do people think of Alicia Vikander in the role? Do you see her as a Tomb Raider type? She's hot right now. Like, basically, she's being cast for whatever she can fit into. It's her and Eddie Redmayne are getting every role.
I mean, I don't really know, because I've never really seen her in, like, an action-y, adventure-y type of role before.
Yeah.
But I've really only seen her in 2 movies, you know, in Danish Girl and in
Ex Machina. Which she was great in.
She was absolutely great in. It's just, you know, I don't know, like, because I've seen her in those roles where,
she was
very powerful,
shorts.
But not Lara Crofty, then it's like, I mean, you know, she's been a period woman from the 1920s who's very okay with her husband, you know, transitioning into a woman.
Yeah.
But not, you know. and then also, you know, a robot who kills.
But she's been in a lot of other movies.
Yeah.
She
was great in Ex Machina.
Yeah, no,
but that is completely different from what I need out of my Lara Croft. Now, is she going to be khaki shorts and teal tank top Lara Croft? Or is she going to be our modern Lara Croft, who is, like, much, much more toned down from a stylistic standpoint?
I'm thinking
standpoint.
Probably that.
It's like khaki capris and a tank top of a color that actually people wear that color of tank top.
She actually has the accent, so that'll be definitely above.
Well, she has an accent. I believe she's Swedish.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not the accent.
But she can put on an accent. accent.
Whatever, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
The movie, we will see.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know anything other than she's been cast.
It has the first hurdle of being a good video game movie.
Yeah.
If it can even accomplish that, which is already stacked up against it traditionally, then we'll see how Alicia Vikander does in the role.
The code isn't even that hard to crack, and if they read my thesis, they would know. Hollywood has been cracking the code accidentally for decades.
On what?
Movies that aren't directly based off of video games. They've just have video gamey structure that actually works.
Okay. That's your thesis? That's Let's my not thesis. Read it on air.
I'd like to begin with a reading of my thesis. Chapter 1, in which our writer finds himself in an interesting predicament.
All right, we'll edit that shit out.
Last news story. The Flash director has departed amid creative differences with the studio. This is Graham Smith, the screenwriter of Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. yeah, Seth Graham Smith was going to direct this thing.
Such prestige.
Now, a lot of people are confused about the flashes and all of the flashing going on here. This is not the Flash that has anything to do with the CW television show, which a lot of people seem to like. Yeah. This is the Flash that's supposed to fit in with the DC universe that has just kind of been launched by Batman v Superman with Ezra Miller in the role. And if you saw BV Superman, you saw that little scene where Wonder Woman is looking at a jump drive and she looks at some footage of Ezra Miller at a grocery store flashing.
I feel okay. Like in most states you would go to jail for that. I have my theories on this.
Yeah. All right, go ahead.
Okay, because basically they gave Zack Snyder the keys to the franchise.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that basically what we can expect out of DC's cinematic universe,
which is not much,
big air quotes around yeah. it, because it doesn't really exist yet. Basically what we have is Man of Steel and BVS.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which I think was a huge misstep.
Yeah, and critics generally panned Batman v Superman, right?
Right.
So I think that he's jumping ship because he senses that it is sinking.
I don't think it's that. I think he wanted to make a better movie, and they're like, Nah,
instead make it more like a Zack Snyder film.
Yeah, which, I mean, that's worked for them so well so far.
It made money.
It made money it shouldn't have.
It's not
and
going
I think
to...
we've all seen that it should not have.
Right. It's not going to make $1 billion, which is ridiculous to say because that's so much money. I think right now it's probably hanging around the 800 millions.
Mm-hmm.
What was the biggest sign of its problems as a movie was the drop-off from the box office of the first weekend to the second and then to the third. Like, it pretty much exponentially lost revenue every weekend it was out. And by the time
Because
of word of mouth. Yeah. Nobody who saw it the first weekend was going back. So that tells more than anything, really. It did well enough. I think it'll make its money back ultimately, but I think it was seen as underperforming ultimately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the problem is that there's enough Batman fans and enough Superman fans that they're like, maybe it'll be good this time. and it wasn't.
I don't feel like the Flash has the same draw.
No, I don't think that either.
Even with the increased popularity that comes out of
yeah,
the TV show.
Yeah, I mean, but if they're not going to cross it into that, if there's no crossover between the show, which actually has popularity, and the actual movie, I think there's going to be a few Flash fans, but there's nowhere near as many fans of the Flash as there are of Superman and Batman. They don't have the draw.
Yeah.
So I think they're going to see that it's not this isn't a good idea, you know.
they might have to back off, wait a couple of years, and start over. Basically, that's what I think is the path forward for DC.
Have you heard my idea for the fact that Phil Lord and Chris Miller
mm-hmm.
should just make every movie?
we actually talked about that on the last episode. We brought up something. I forgot. It was in our movie news, and Richard suggested them as directors, and I just said, you just want them to direct everything.
I do, but, though. Yeah.
This is like when I saw the Mad Max trailer and was like, I'm mad at every film that isn't Mad Max, right?
Yeah.
I'm mad at every movie that doesn't have the heart that those two bring to their direction.
Well, the thing is that Phil Lord and Chris Miller, they did the Lego Movie and 21 and 22 Jump Street, which should not have been good movies.
And the Cloudy with a Chance of Meatball movies.
Yeah, they're
none
movies,
of those should have been good.
Yeah, they're movies that should not have been made. and should not have been good. And the thing is that they take movies where, like, 21 Jump Street, why was that remade? It should not have been. But they did it, and they're like, let's make this appealing to the new crowd, like people that would actually go see this movie. And they did it well. And it was smart, and it was interesting, and it was funny, and it was well done. And it had pretty much nothing to do with the original. But that was good. And the Lego Movie was amazing. It was by far the best animation of that year, even though it didn't win, because Disney always wins. And I was thinking about this when Jim and the Holograms just, like,
bombed
so bad. I was like, you know,
Jim and the Holograms,
exactly. Because that movie, again, should not have been made, and clearly, again, should not have been made. But if they're gonna make a movie that should not be made, they should give it to Phil Lord and Chris Miller.
They are the guys for the movies that should not be made.
Exactly.
I actually, funnily enough, I was a little optimistic about Jim and the Holograms because they got John M. Chu, director of Step Up 3D.
Okay.
Which only you're a fan of. Continue.
You are the one person on this planet
whose like high pop aesthetic would have actually worked really well for a Jim and the Holograms kind of send up, but they didn't let him do that. Instead, they wanted him to make Never Say Never or whatever, one of those kind of Bieber-y kind of movies, but then with some sci-fi element. And so it ended up just being super forgettable. But
yeah, and bad.
And apparently, like, I think of all the movies that came out last year, like, had some of the worst box office, like, ever.
Yeah, I feel like it didn't make any money at all.
It was a bad trailer. I mean, when the trailer came out, the head girl, the girl who played Jem, was like, don't watch the trailer. The movie's way better than the trailer. And it's like, bitch, do you know how movies work? This is marketing. This is how you market a movie. If the marketing is bad, no one's going to see the movie.
Right. So we're not very optimistic about Flash, then?
I don't think DC has any idea what they're doing with creating a cinematic universe right now. And Marvel is trouncing them on every front.
I think they make okay enough trailers to get some people interested, and I think with how bad Batman vs. Superman was, no one's gonna keep going. Because, I mean, the best movie they've done was Man of Steel, which I didn't like.
Nobody liked Man of Steel.
No, some people did. Some people really did.
Those people are apologists.
I think even the people who like Man of Steel more than they don't like it, and I would include myself in that category, find it problematic at best.
Yeah.
It's interesting sometimes and has a lot of problems, which was the foot that they started out on heading into the disaster that was BV Superman.
Yeah.
And then Batman and Wonder Woman at the end look at each other and they're like, I guess we have to start the Justice League now because that's what happens next.
All right, we're
I'll say this before we move on from this Flash story. Director leaving, it doesn't sound like he had a lot of credits to his name anyway, so I think they can plug in anybody there and get the same result. Especially if they're looking just to hire a cheap screenwriter to direct a movie, then there's plenty of them out there. That's not going to be the problem. I think Ezra Miller is an interesting actor. I think too interesting, actually, to be involved with these type of movies.
I agree.
He should continue on the road he was already on. I think he could be something like a Johnny Depp type back when Johnny Depp was cool.
I agree.
And so I think he should continue on with like the We Need to Talk About Kevin trajectory. But I would be interested to see what he would do with The Flash if given a halfway decent screenplay. Lastly, I'm curious to see how Suicide Squad does.
I also agree.
I don't
with
think
that.
It's going to be good. I think the fact that they're doing reshoots to try and make it funnier and more like Deadpool, that gives me pause. But I like David Ayer as a director, generally speaking. And I think that he could bring something different to whatever it is that Zack Snyder's trying to set up that could breathe some sort of life into this fledgling movie universe that they're trying. So I will know exactly how the DCU is going to run after that movie comes out. Until then, right now, I'm on the fence.
Okay. I mean, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. I mean, I have no hype for Suicide Squad. Yeah, I think that the premise was tiresome when the trailer came out. Yeah. I was already done. And the press coming out of Suicide Squad has not been interesting. It's like, Jared Leto sent severed pig's heads to his class members. All right, I guess. Like, this is clearly a stunt to generate press, meaning you have nothing to say about the movie.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It just doesn't look good to me.
I'm very hesitant, but I'm very interested just because, in my opinion, Marvel has better heroes and DC has better villains. That's how I've always felt.
That's true.
Yeah.
Marvel has better heroes and Batman has better villains.
No, DC has really good villains. They really do. In general, they really do. Except for Reverse Flash. Like, really? Like,
Reverse Flash.
Like, you can do better.
And Bizarro.
Okay, Bizarro.
No, let's not get into this. Anyway, so I'm interested because they do have interesting... the psychology of DC villains is very interesting to me. On the other hand, they can very easily screw it up. If they don't even delve into that at all, they just, like, kind of throw bad people into a bad situation and say, this could be good.
Yeah.
It's like...
And then have Batfleck
you're not
show up.
Playing with it at all when you should be playing with it. That's the whole point of this.
Yeah, and they haven't established any of those characters. And, there's no reason to believe that based upon, you know, the way the production's gone, that it should be good.
Yeah.
But I'm more interested in the David Ayer aspect of it because I thought Fury, for what it was an interesting war movie. I didn't love End of Watch, but I see some raw talent in there.
Mm-hmm.
And he's an interesting choice for this type of movie.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because it's completely different from what he usually does.
Right.
But at the same time, it's like, it's completely different from what he usually does. That might be a bad thing.
But know? I generally think that the best superhero movies have been directed by people who aren't normally associated with superhero movies.
Yeah, I mean, James Gunn did Guardians of the Galaxy. And
thank God for the Russo brothers.
You know, he's you know, very used to doing very low budget stuff, and he did a very high budget movie, and they just took a chance on him. And he was great. It was a great movie, and he really... was the reason it was great, so.
Totes.
Anyway.
Let's get on to our movie review. Today, we went and saw Keanu, the comedy, like I said before, starring Key and Peele from the Comedy Central sketch comedy show, Key and Peele.
is that what it's called?
It is. which just ended, I think, right?
Just announced that they were done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I know that Jordan Peele actually co-wrote the screenplay here. He has another movie coming out, a horror film that he co-wrote that he's working on right now. And I'm a little interested also to see how the Key and Peele brand continues on in the future. And I think that this movie might be a little bit of an indicator of what that might be. But who wants to set it up? Who wants to talk about what happens in Keanu?
The basic premise is that this guy just lost his girlfriend. They broke up and he's really down and depressed and stuff. And he finds this kitten that just kind of brightens up his whole world. And then it turns, people break into his house and steal his cat, and he finds out they're drug dealers, and he goes to the drug dealers and decides to, like, fake his way into stealing the cat back. It's a strange premise, but fun nonetheless.
It gets broad quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. And the cat has so much importance to this guy.
Yeah.
Who is immediately just like drawn in and enamored. and is like so in love with this kitten, right? And at first you think, well, maybe it's because he was so down on his luck, and then you realize that everybody who encounters this kitten feels that way.
Yeah.
Like every single person, no matter how big and tough and dangerous they are, or even if they're Luis Guzman. Like
they will murder for this cat.
Yeah. Like this cat is very important to everyone.
And considering this is a movie that's primarily about the cuteness of a kitten, there is a pretty high body count.
Oh yeah.
Well, it's very interesting.
The opening scene, the way we're introduced to the kitten, is like in this bloodbath.
Yeah.
While the kitten runs and like dodges bullets and like escapes in the most adorable way.
Yeah.
While people die.
Yeah.
And this keeps happening.
And I mean, it was a very well cast kitten. I don't know how long the movie was, but there were many times, like even towards the end, where I just was like, oh, like not even caring about the rest of the movie. I'm just like, oh, he's so cute.
did they use just one kitten, or did they like train multiple?
A couple times I could tell it was CG.
Yeah.
CG, really?
Yeah, for sure.
They just might have used a different cat or something.
No way. There were definitely a few moments where they were like, we need the kitten to run across this specific zone, and that was CG.
Yeah. I mean, flying through air stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They kind of had to, because otherwise it could hurt the kitten, so.
Oh, well, then, right. Yeah.
But there was definitely a kitten, which sets this movie apart from, say, your Jurassic Worlds, in that there's actually a physical kitten that people are falling in love with on screen.
Right. Yeah. I was actually very surprised, though. You mentioned one person. Obviously, the Jordan Peele, who plays this guy who's been broken up with, he sort of drags along his, I guess, dorky suburban
cousin
in on this adventure while they're supposed to be having fun on a Saturday night. And when they come back, and they reveals that the cat's been stolen, and they both kind of get roped in. And if I'm allowed to put the critic hat on for such a silly movie.
Yeah, I guess you could wear the hat.
I'll wear the hat a little. There's a couple things going on here about the challenging of masculinity.
Sure. Mm,
yeah. And I think that's a big part of where the humor derives.
And racialized masculinity.
Yes.
Yeah.
Racialized masculinity especially. And I think one of the big things I notice, which is a theme that runs through their comedy in general, because they're both... half black, half white, and I think that they've always kind of straddled that line themselves, and so a lot of their humor has to deal with code switching. And I think a big part of what this movie is about is code switching, and trying to find your way and trying to feel yourself out in a culture you maybe don't identify with exactly, but sort of have this strange connection to anyway. Mm-hmm. And then there's, you know, the cultural implications and pop cultural implications of those cultures, and how you sort of feel pressured to be a part of those things. Mm-hmm. Which is a really highfalutin way of saying, you know, it's a funny movie and you don't really have to think about any of that stuff, but it's in there if you're looking for it.
Yeah, that's a carryover from their show. Do you watch Key and Peele?
Oh yeah, I'm obsessed.
Yeah, I mean, they often play with gender roles and, you know, code switching upon those. They also play with racial roles. They also play with masculine and that kind of thing.
Yeah, very subversive show.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's good about it, is that it's humorous. It's, like, you know, applicable to many people, but also, like, very well done. I mean, there's some real good sketches out there. but also, like, I was a little worried about that coming into this, because... I was really hoping that it didn't turn into an Anchorman 2 situation in which they took like 15 different ideas for a movie and threw them all together and was like, maybe it'll work. And it doesn't. It's just a big old hot mess. And in this one, it pretty much stays consistent.
Yeah, it's even a pretty simple story.
Yeah, even though there's a lot going on, I mean, the plot kind of rolls into this whole big mess, but in a way that is structurally sound. So I mean, for that I applaud it. It was pretty well done. Were there moments where you thought that the humor lulled or anything like that?
Maybe a little.
Yes.
Yeah. But nothing serious. And it helped that the movie could wave a kitten in my face and make me forget. that I hadn't laughed in a minute or so. And they'd be like, but the kitten is here. And I'd be like, I'm back in it. I gotta find out what happens to this kitten.
I mean, it works.
It does.
No. Yeah. I'm not ashamed to admit that I'm more interested when a kitten is on screen.
That's true.
Than when there isn't. And actually, there's very long stretches of the movie where the cat is not on screen.
Yeah.
The cat is...
The whole middle, we kind of
like it.
The cat's
kind of
gone.
The cat is the MacGuffin.
Yeah.
But for, the big ride-along scenes, which is the bulk of the action of it, of them pretending to be drug dealers and trying to one-upmanship and all of that stuff and trying to stay in character and pull it off, that stuff dominates the majority of what the movie is, and that is all pretty light on the cat.
That's true. Yeah.
That's true. Yeah.
But there was that really cool, that whole bit.
The whole sequence with Anna Faris.
That's so fascinating. Like, everything about it was so interesting.
And it was really well shot, actually. Like, on top of it being a really funny comedy set piece, and being Anna Faris plays Manic really well.
Yeah.
Not to mention cutting back to the van and having the guys sing George Michael and
all of that stuff.
It just kept piling on itself.
Between the two situations and stuff, yeah.
That was a really well-edited and really well-shot sequence. And actually even, like, I thought was, like, vaguely thrilling for a goofy comedy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I will say, though, that I think, me personally, I did feel the comedy lull towards the middle when it became more interested in just continuing on with the plot mechanics of getting, from A to B in the story. And I felt like that they had a few, like you brought the cat, they wave it in your face and make you laugh again. I felt like they had, towards the middle of the movie, rather than trying to actually build up to jokes, they just had a few joke cards that they could pull out when they needed. And that was the cat or... George Michael, and it was acceptable. I was interested enough in the story itself, and the action set pieces were shot well enough that I didn't need it to be hilarious all the time. And Key and Peele just have good enough chemistry with each other to keep it funny, even if the dialogue isn't really selling any jokes. I thought that actually a lot of what was going on in the movie might have worked better as a sketch. And in a lot of ways felt very sketch prepared. Rather, it feels a little stretched thin to me. It's
funny that you say that, because the mansion towards the end of the movie, that is a set piece. I know it from Key and Peele. I've seen it and was like... Oh, yeah, they're back here. Yeah. But Katie, you said after the movie that you felt the length of it.
Oh, yeah. So sometimes I did. I mean, I think it was kind of what you were saying. I think I might have just had, not laughed in a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what kept me interested, actually? even though it hadn't been funny in a while, what I thought kind of brought it back a little bit after that big, long Anna Faris set piece is I kind of got into the compadres, the other gangsters that they meet and the relationships they built with them. I felt like there was the seeds of a maybe slightly more interesting movie there, that if they had gone that angle about them kind of like really trying to lead this group.
Maybe George Michael is like, he starts like actually like training the gangsters into being like a more communicative.
And that kind of, that pays off in the end, right? Mm. But it doesn't feel like it pays off with enough buildup.
Yeah,
I agree. The whole team building exercise thing.
It kind of came out of nowhere. Like, we didn't know that about.
Oh, they're communicating better, but that hadn't really.
They
happened.
Just kind of mentioned it in dialogue.
They tell us.
Yeah, I feel like they should have set that up a bit more, which may have been like a deleted that might have scene been lost. Or something. Yeah.
That could have been lost in an edit.
Yeah,
I feel like there's a scene we didn't see.
Yeah, I felt like that too. Yeah. So that I feel like it needed a little bit more development before like there was an actual payoff, because if there was a payoff, that would the payoff would work much better if there was a bit more of setup.
I actually think that this movie is really lean and it's built to be really joke a minute and move quickly. And I appreciate economy and storytelling, especially in broad comedies, But I actually feel like if we just had one or two more scenes with our leads at the beginning of the movie, just to get a better feel for their situation, because Jordan Peele, we know he's depressed and his girlfriend broke up with him, and that's kind of enough for him. There's a lot of stuff we don't really know about Key that they hint at pretty hardcore, like these big beats about his character that feel really vague. Like there's this whole thing with Rob Hugel who may be hitting on his wife, but and they touch on that, but like, and it's kind of a serious beat, and then they don't really go there.
The whole thing with that, with like she's going off for the weekend and he has the house to himself, where the hell is she going with this like other guy and their kids?
I guess the children were friends, and I guess their families hung
out. I felt it was just very vague, you know, and also
I was getting the impression that Michael was also playing a stepdad.
Like, yeah, yeah.
The daughter calls him Clarence.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, like, I mean, all these things are just, like, very minimal, and I feel like they're all of those could have been a little bit more build-up within the characters,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
like,
we could have known. Come up again.
Right.
Like, yeah.
It kind of did at the end.
Yeah.
But, like,
barely.
But yeah. I feel like we didn't really get to know more about their characters because there wasn't enough set up about who they actually are, other than, like, we're cousins, which is mentioned in, like, the first scene, and it's like...
Right.
It's like, you really have to listen to this movie for you to get much out of it, and even that is pretty minimal in, like, who they are and where they've come from and why they're getting into this situation, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah.
You know, coming from nothing in their background.
I think it's more interested in being a situational comedy, which is fine, but yeah, it feels like a lot of their character choices are built more on affectation than they are actually informed by the screenplay. And it's good that they're good enough actors and that we already have a sense of who they are as people because we've been watching their show and who they are as comedians. But I felt like as a comedy it would have been stronger even if we just had one scene of Keegan-Michael Key doing a team building exercise at his work, just one scene of him just to get an idea of like why that joke makes sense later.
Instead of it being a one-off line that's like, you do corporate team building.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
You are a photographer, I think.
Don't even know what that... Does he make calendars for a living?
I don't think that was really all that important for the story.
No.
I guess, I think
just like, he's artsy. He makes things.
Right. I agree
big
with that.
LA job.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, parts I think they did skim down because they were like, this isn't really relevant to the rest of the story. Yeah. But I also think like there was a lot of that, you know?
Yeah.
Which makes it feel more like a sketch because there's not enough time in a sketch for you to develop a character and stuff like that. But in a film, like, you have time. You could develop who these people freaking are if we're going to, you know, follow them.
They
could have
painted them
in
slightly less broad strokes.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm the more we talk about it, the more I'm seeing, like, when you are a character in a sketch, you're like an archetype.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm going to play the nerd. One of my favorite Key and Peele sketches is Kanye the Giant.
Oh, yes.
When they're playing D&D. And it's very much, it's like, I'm the nerd. And then he's like, I'm the gangster. And it's like, all right, I get it. Like, that's what you guys are.
Yeah. Because all you have to do in a sketch is pay off a premise.
Mm.
But this movie is essentially just doing that. It's paying off a premise.
Yeah.
And I think that it has some smart social stuff in there, but I think it could have been more informed by the characters. What did we think of the supporting cast? We have Will Forte in there playing their drug dealer neighbor, who I think that's pretty funny.
He was funny, but
I like that.
I got tired of him pretty quick. It was nice to leave him for most of the movie and then have him come back at the end.
I really liked everything with him being locked in a trunk
with the snake. I also enjoyed Method Man as the dangerous gangster Cheddar. I think he's kind of playing to type, I suppose, but he does it well.
Yeah, I mean, he kind of always plays that kind of a character, but I have to say, I was thinking back and I was like, every movie I've seen Method Man in, I have enjoyed.
You were way into How High?
He was in How High.
It's pretty good.
It's exactly what you want out of it. He was in Garden State for half a second.
Oh, yeah.
And he was pretty good in it. And then he was in this, and I was like, you know what? You're doing it well.
I really liked Tiffany Haddish as the gangster girl, High C. I thought, given what there is to do in the role, which isn't a lot, really, I believed her. She was really good.
She played the character with a lot of depth. She seemed simultaneously the most legitimate out of the entire group. She wasn't some caricature.
Yeah.
But also the payoff with her character at the end seemed really
genuine.
It worked.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was actually when that payoff happens, I was happy for her that I was okay, there is a reason why you seem to be putting so much into this character.
Yeah.
And you kind of, the character just sort of grows more and more as the movie goes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I see things in Tiffany Haddish's future.
Yeah, which she doesn't have that many credits to her name. She's only been in a couple of things.
Yeah.
So, and not really much to even mention, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, she was really good in this, and I agree. I think that we'll be seeing more of her.
Any final words on Keanu before we move on to the Netflix homework?
Cute cats are cute.
I feel like I can recommend the movie based on how many times I laughed and how cute the kitten was.
My God, the kitten, the hatten,
catten,
that catten.
I want the calendar.
I want the calendar. That'll be my 2017.
It'll be available this holiday
season. I guarantee it's already online somewhere. Yeah, I mildly recommend it. I think it's a matinee kind of movie. I'd say you probably don't want to pay full price, but if you're a fan of Key and Peele and you like their comedy, there's enough here to like.
Yeah. I think it was very fun.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It'll be one of those movies you watch stoned later on USA.
Dude, that network I don't think exists anymore.
No, TNT? It's
totally around. You own a TV?
I legitimately never turn on an actual television.
UPN? It's always
a monitor for a device. It's not. UPN? Motherfucker.
All right, let's get into the Netflix homework, which I did not watch because I completely forgot. I'm sorry.
And you're a godless heathen.
Yes, I'm the worst person in the world, but why don't you...
Good luck, future Cassidy.
Why don't you explain to me what's going on in Guess Who's Back?
Decker, do you want to take it away?
Yeah, all right. Here's the setup. It's Berlin, 2014, and Hitler appears and wakes up and believes that the war is either just ended or is still on. He has no memory of the end of the war.
So this is unfrozen caveman Hitler.
Yeah, that's a lot. Yes, that is a good way to describe it. So he starts walking around and asking people questions, and people immediately start to assume that he's a comedian playing Hitler. And he gets really popular really fast, leading to him having kind of a scary amount of power in the media to spread the same Hitler-y messages, but in our current society.
Okay. I'm going to need to... You're going to edit all of this out. It's called Look Who's Back.
Oh.
What are we going to do? Let's just say Look Who's Back a couple of ways.
You're fine.
This clip will
go back. First part of this thing, you're going to be like...
That's okay. Nobody's heard of this movie. We're good.
Yeah, so anyway...
Look Who's Back.
Look Who's Back. It's on Netflix. It's available right now. It was... crazy to watch a German comedy.
The reason that we actually watched this was completely by mistake. Our friend actually works for the company that produced this. Constantine, who also did all of the Resident Evil movies and is currently doing the last Resident Evil movie. they produced it and distributed it in Germany, and it was pretty big there. And it's very much mixed version of Borat.
Meets the Great Dictator?
Yeah.
Yeah, actually,
yes. It's because there are many times when Hitler is talking to people on the streets.
Okay.
And he's getting their opinion on immigration in their country.
Is it done, like, in a candid camera?
Yeah, yeah, it very much feels like he's just kind of walking up to people and he's like, "Hi, I'm Hitler." And everybody's like, "Oh, here's Hitler. Mm-hmm. Like, let's talk to Hitler." And then he'll, like, ask, like, a really incisive question. And then they'll be like, "No, I think there are too many immigrants in this country."
Yeah.
And to hear people say that to Hitler...
Or somebody who looks like him.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it just, there's a lot of power even in that. And that he gets some people to say some really intolerant shit.
Yeah. There's also, like, a couple times where he says something that is definitely something that Hitler alone would say.
Yeah.
And you expect them to be like, "What? No." And they're like, "Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying.
That's how I feel about
this. That's how I feel about this." Yeah. You are right on the money, right. Hitler.
What's kind of freaky is that this whole film was, like, shot in 2014. So yeah. This is, like, prior to when, like, Donald Trump started running for president. And it's like there are a lot of, like really crazy parallels with, like...
Well, I can already... Election. It seems very prescient because, you know, Trump is sort of a celebrity... And is sort of seen, I think, you know, prior to his, or maybe right after him coming out as a candidate, sort of straddled this weird thing of, like, I'm a joke candidate and people want to root for me just to see the world burn. Like, they just think it'd be so hilarious. And then eventually people kind of actually started buying into his, you know, basically fascist philosophies that... He may not even really believe in. It's hard to even know with that guy.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter because he stands up now for a symbol of intolerance. So yeah, it sounds crazy relevant.
It's weird how appropriate it is for our election cycle for sure. Yeah.
It's weird how appropriate it was for us to watch, you know, at this time. You know, and the fact that, you know, we just kind of caught it by accident when we were just like, "What movie should we watch on Netflix tonight?" Yeah.
That said, it was funny.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It was very funny.
I laughed.
Yeah, a lot.
A couple of times it shocked me to laughter.
Yeah.
Like the scene with the dog.
Oh my gosh.
Which is just like so... Out of nowhere.
No spoilers.
But there's this scene.
Shocking.
And I was just rolling because it was just so crazy.
So unexpected. But
our main character is Hitler.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then near the end, it also gets very meta.
Yeah, it also, like, it not only shocked me to laughter, it shocked me to silence. Where I was like, "Oh my god!"
It feels like it has a kind of like a face in the crowd kind of vibe to it as well.
I mean, it was very, it very much talked about like kind of the
media and
how the media works and how it highlights certain things in a way that should not be appropriate. How
propaganda works.
Yeah, I mean because the networks start to realize immediately that Hitler gets them ratings.
Yeah.
Talking about Hitler, printing news about Hitler, anything about Hitler, it sells like gangbusters because he's insane.
Yeah.
And
this is in Berlin. Like, in Berlin you cannot bring up Hitler.
Right,
like,
that's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
The last I'd heard that Germany does not take their history about this lightly. Like,
no.
Here in America, everybody's Hitler.
Yeah.
We compare everybody to Hitler if we even dislike him a little. But in Germany, if you can compare your politicians to Hitler, mm-hmm. they actually will stop you and be like, "Don't say that. He's not Hitler."
Yeah.
Like, we had Hitler.
Yeah, so, they allude to this a few times.
They're like, "A comedy with Hitler? Does that work?"
Yeah, I mean, they're like, "In this country?"
Right.
Like, you know,
if he says anything about Jewish people, we are going to be taken off the air.
I mean, there's that. There's also, like, there's a few people on the street that weren't crazy.
Yeah, they're like, I don't think you should be doing this.
Yeah, they're like, this is a horrible thing that you're doing right now. Why are you doing this? You know.
But then again, then there's entire militant groups of soccer hooligans who are like, yeah, beat him up. He's foreign.
Yeah, I mean, this is alluded to in the movie, but it's also, like, I think they cut it on purpose because they're like, we're clearly making a movie, you know?
Right, right. Well, I mean, if you put anybody in front of a camera, if it's a candid camera kind of situation, they have to sign a waiver to be put in the final cut. Even Sacha Baron Cohen, I think, follows those rules, kind of.
He got sued a lot after Borat. yeah, so, I mean... I liked it.
Oh yeah. I think everybody needs to watch this movie.
Yeah.
Before they hit the polls. For sure.
A lot of people already hit the polls.
I know. Okay, but half of the country hasn't, and mm-hmm. they should check it out.
And you recommend as well?
Yeah, no, it was worthwhile watch, yes.
Yeah.
It sounds interesting. I'm bummed that I didn't catch it. I will. Mm-hmm. I'll try and watch it.
Yeah, it was really interesting. And, like, kind of sad and kind of dark and kind of funny and, like, yeah, mm-hmm. and thought-provoking. And, yeah, it was good. It was a good accidental watch. Mm-hmm. And I would accidentally watch it again.
Look who's back, not guess.
Look who's back.
Back again.
Yeah.
Back. All right. Well, that's the show. And before I read off my end notes, does anybody have anything they want to plug? A Twitter? A Facebook, live journal.
Panel and Frame can be viewed at panelandframe.com. Yes, we have our own domain.
You do.
You don't even have to navigate through Medium to get there. We can be tweeted at Panel and Frame. We can be emailed at panelandframe@gmail.com. We can be... I don't know. What else do we have? Oh, we can be Facebooked. Thank you, engineers. We are accepting submissions for daily posting. So anything in the realm of comics, literature, art, or film, popular culture, we sometimes expand into the world of gaming. These are all great things. If you have something to say, we will be your place to say it. As long as it's not crazy.
With some editorial oversight.
Yeah.
Yes. What about you, Katie? Do you have any art that you want people to look at?
Yeah, I have your drawings. I have an art Tumblr. It's just Katie Tambor art at tumblr.com. And
you should.
And I have a website called just katietambor.com.
She's got her own domain. You do not need to navigate through some other website.
Yes, and you can see my demo reel and stuff like that.
Awesome. And at some point when we actually talk about an animated film, I want you on the show to do your own episode so that we can get all of your...
Oh, yeah.
I have a couple friends who are involved in animation and I might try and make it a thing.
Oh, yeah, that'd be fun if like, we got like, a bunch of animators together. Yeah.
And get real inside baseball on animation.
I'd be into that, yeah.
I don't think
into like super technical jargon that nobody understands.
I don't think they play baseball. They're animators. They mostly sit at desks.
It's a lot of sitting, yes.
All right. And if anybody has anything to say about anything we talked about today, whether it's Keanu, Look Who's Back, any comments you might have about the show, please email them at jabberinthedrone@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/jabberpodcast. You can follow us on Twitter at jabberpodcast. We are searchable under iTunes, Stitcher Radio, player.fm, Pocket Cast, Windows, and the Zune Podcast Network.
Oh, can I get you through Podcast Addict?
No, is that a new one?
No, you know what? If you have an RSS feed, you show up on them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to plug Podcast Addict, the best free podcatcher for your Android device.
I might have to go make sure we're on that. I'm signing up with a new one like every day, I feel like.
Excellent.
You can read my movie reviews that I do weekly for the Idaho State Journal at saladforkreviews.blogspot.com. You can read some of the content I provided for the Seattle-based entertainment website, MacGuffin at MacGuff.in/author/Cassidy. You've already pimped out Panel and Frame, so I don't have to do that. We have some friends out there who still do podcasts, including our friend Leland from Olympia, Washington, over at his comedy podcast, dampercast.com. Rod and Denise down here in Southern California, who do the music request podcast, The Listening Party. And Patrick, who I mentioned a little bit ago, who writes into the show often, over at his two podcasts, Make Dad Read Comics and Almost Educational. That's it. Thanks for coming on, guys.
Thank you for having us.
Bye.